Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Rob. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop on caregiving for your loved one with cancer. And today's program is supported by ISI, Inc., and I really want to thank them for their support to this program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I just want to let you know a little bit about who's on the call today. We have over 300 participants on the call today, and you come from all different parts of the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities, and we also have international participants today from Algeria, Canada, Kenya, and the United Kingdom, so this is a global call. And it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. And now, it is my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Ms. Nina Kapoor Hinson. And Ms. Hinson is supportive care nurse practitioner, advanced practice provider manager, supportive care, geriatric oncology, and integrative medicine, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Ms. Hinson will be addressing definition of a caregiver, communicating with the healthcare team, including prepared list of questions and discussion of open notes, what research tells us about caregivers' well-being, and lastly, caregiving for an older adult, younger adult, a friend, or a cancer survivor. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Nina Kapoor Hinson.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, for inviting me to speak today, and thank you to all of you for joining. So I'll start with what is a caregiver? So there are two types of caregivers, formal and informal. Formal caregivers are ones that we normally think about as paid. However, the majority of caregiving needs for cancer patients are provided for by informal caregivers, which will be the focus of this talk today. Informal caregivers are unpaid family or friends who provide physical and emotional support to a person with cancer during and after treatment. They work closely with the patient's medical team, as well as other family and friends, to organize and support care needs of patients. Caregivers can live with, nearby, or further away from the patient, and depending on their location, caregivers may prioritize different aspects of care. Some things that caregivers may help with include bathing, dressing, toileting, mobility, administering medications, housework, shopping, cooking, finances, making appointments, providing transportation, providing emotional support, helping to manage side effects of treatment, and assisting with treatment decisions. Informal caregivers are highly prevalent in the United States and are a critical source of care for cancer patients, with many providing 30 to 40 hours of care a week. So what does research tell us about caregivers' well-being? Caregiving can provide an opportunity to learn about yourself, your loved one, and enhance meaning in both of your lives. There are many positive benefits of being an informal caregiver, including coming to adjust to things that cannot be changed, feeling a closer bond with family and friends, having a greater appreciation for life and loved ones, reprioritizing your life priorities, having increased faith, increased empathy, a positive self-view, and better health habits for yourself. Caregiving can also be burdensome, and it's normal to feel strained. Caregivers can feel stressed with trying to balance the demands of caregiving along with competing responsibilities, including working, caring for other loved ones, and caring for oneself. Caregivers can experience anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and a decline in their quality of life. Patients and caregivers influence each other's mental and physical health, and in addition to their own outcomes, identifying caregiver burden and supporting their well-being is really crucial to enhancing the overall well-being of cancer patients. So what are some tips to help yourself be well? Take care of yourself. It ensures your ability to take care of your loved one. Prioritize your responsibilities, take a break from cancer caregiving, and make time for yourself. Don't neglect your personal life, your routine, your own health, or your wellness. Eat healthy meals, get enough rest, exercise, and take your medications as prescribed. And ask for help from others, seek professional help if needed, and consider joining a caregiving support group. You can educate yourself. The ever-changing landscape of cancer can be overwhelming to navigate. To learn about cancer, cancer treatments, and side effects, the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, or NCCN, has a resource called Guidelines for Patients. This site includes a comprehensive list of cancers in English and multiple other languages. The information is concise, written in plain language, and it contains great questions for you to engage your healthcare team with. If you're experiencing financial strain, engage your healthcare and social work team to identify resources and help tailor the health plan to meet your specific needs. Establish and maintain a care plan. This will be an invaluable tool that saves you time and optimizes care for your loved one. The CDC, or Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, has a caregiving care plan template on their website that you can fill in directly and print out. You should include all health conditions, medications, healthcare providers, emergency contacts, and caregiving resources on this plan. Share time and special moments with your loved one with cancer. Often people become closer as they face challenges together. Consider creating a caregiving team and delegate tasks to others and also accept help when offered. And last but not least, engage palliative care. If your loved one or your quality of life is significantly impaired due to cancer, palliative care can provide support through comprehensive assessment of distress and assistance to optimize well-being throughout the cancer trajectory. Now I'm going to shift to caregiving for different types of patients. So when caring for an older adult or adults age 65 and older, they're more likely to have other health concerns alongside their cancer diagnosis. They may also have some problems with memory and thinking, and challenges faced by caregivers of older adults include balancing caregiving needs with their own needs, like their job and needs of their immediate family. You may not live close to your loved one who you're caring for, and you may need to balance your own health conditions with your loved one's conditions. So when caring for older adults, it's important to ensure that all their health conditions are being attended to. Additionally, be proactive rather than reactive about treating cancer and cancer treatment-related symptoms and ensure compliance with necessary medications to optimize overall health and symptoms. This will allow cancer patients to fare better through treatment and in turn reduce your stress. Assess for and mitigate any falls risk. Review finances and legal documents to help plan how to pay bills and who will make decisions if a loved one cannot. Ask your loved one about their preferences and encourage them to share those preferences with their healthcare team and respect their right to make their own choices. When caring for a younger adult, we have a special population called the AYA population, also known as the adolescent and young adult population. These are persons aged 15 to 39, and they comprise a very special group within oncology care. During this period of time, a transformation occurs where AYA patients move towards autonomy. They become independent from their parents, form their identity, explore intimacy, finish their education, start their careers and families. A cancer diagnosis is truly unexpected and disrupts this process significantly. Cognitive capabilities and emotional maturation in this population may not be fully developed. There are unique stressors from the cancer diagnosis itself, like confronting the risk of infertility or death at a young age. Many AYAs are treated with curative intent, and that also means that their long-term care needs may extend into survivorship and extend over years. Caregivers may be partners, parents, siblings, and friends, and balancing the care of an AYA patient along with one's job, possibly even homework or care of other children, pose additional unique challenges, leaving little time to rest in between responsibilities. Younger cancer patients and their caregivers tend to be more stressed due to these challenges, and research demonstrates a strong need for emotional help and help attending to their own needs. Simply acknowledging the struggle and difficulty of the situation is often very supportive to caregivers. Support from others in a caregiving team is also perceived as very helpful. Now, when caregiving for friends, friends are essential supports for people with cancer. It is not unusual to experience changes in friendships when going through cancer treatment. You may not know exactly what to say or do. Your friend's treatment may also affect how they physically feel, mentally feel, and emotionally feel. If you are a caregiver to a friend, remember to let that person with cancer make decisions about their care whenever possible. You can explain your perspective and let the patient do the same. Focus your energy and influence on the issues that are most important. Let them know you will be there to listen, and then make sure you're available. Listen actively and without judgment. Respect their need for privacy. Remain consistent, offering support throughout the whole diagnosis, at the beginning, during, and after treatment. And as I mentioned before, cancer caregiving timeline is indefinite. It's important for caregivers to be aware that although cancer treatment may have ended, cancer survivors may still be dealing with several challenges, including long-term side effects of treatment, coping with a new normal, and loss of prior abilities, fear of recurrent cancer, and getting back to day-to-day life. Being aware of your feelings that may come up for you during this time, when you expect that needs may be diminished, is helpful to cope with the ongoing needs that exist of your loved ones. Continue to make time for yourself and let others help you. And now I'm going to shift to talking about communicating with the health team. So when communicating with the health team, it's helpful to have and designate one person to communicate with the health team as much as possible. However, if a patient is able to communicate their experiences directly with healthcare providers, it's important to also ensure that they do so. It's helpful to prepare a list of questions or concerns prior to every office visit in order to make the most of your visit time. Ask providers the best way to contact them in case of additional concerns outside of clinic visits. A very useful resource to understand one's medical care is called Open Notes. Open Notes is an international movement advocating for greater transparency in healthcare. After a visit, your healthcare provider will summarize relevant information into a note. Once these notes are shared with you, it becomes an open note. Research shows that the quality and safety of patient care improves when providers offer patients and families ready access to their clinical notes. So it's important to, but it is also important to be aware that a person's medical record is private. Patients will often choose to share this information with their caregivers in order to help them better manage their healthcare activities, advocate for their safety, help them navigate the healthcare system, respond to crises, and to help them navigate language or other technical barriers. The patient can request shared or proxy access for their caregiver to allow them access to this information. When you read clinical notes, you are better able to prepare questions for the provider. You're able to have more productive discussions during visits. You're more likely to understand and come to an agreement about treatment planning. And you have a better understanding of health conditions, a better ability to remember the care plan, and you feel more in control of one's health. So to finish off, I've prepared a list of questions to help start off your list when thinking about what to ask providers about your loved one. First, about the cancer. What can you tell me about the type of cancer my family member or friend has? What are the risks and benefits of treatment? How do I care for my family member or friend when they're having side effects from treatment while at home? How long will it take for my family member or friend to recover? If you're asked to assist with medical or nursing tasks, ask questions about how do I give that injection or how do I set up those tube feedings. If you have questions about potentially utilizing complementary or alternative therapies, ask about whether or not they would be appropriate, and whether or not they would be useful. It is appropriate for caregivers to ask healthcare providers about taking care of themselves as well. What are the best ways that I can maintain my health and well-being while caregiving? What are some ways that we can deal with what we are feeling? And what are some local resources that we can turn to? So with that, I'll turn back over to Dr. Messner. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Simpson. That was just an outstanding presentation, stellar. And you actually set the context for today's program, really identifying some of the most important aspects of caregiving and also for different groups of people who are that one is caregiving for. So thank you so much. I know there'll be questions to you during the Q&A as well. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos, and Dr. Palos is her own healthcare team. She's a doctor of public health. She's a master's in social work and an RN. She's former clinical protocol administration manager, Office of Cancer Survivorship, University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, author and researcher in caregiving, healthcare disparities, and survivorship. And Dr. Palos will be addressing couples, partners, siblings, and friends, family and partner friend communication, care coordination, challenges and tips, managing family, friends, partners, and traditions, and lastly, stresses on family, partners, and loved ones coping with holidays, birthdays, and special occasions. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Palos.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, for your kind introduction. I also want to thank our callers for joining us on this call. Ms. Kapoor Henson provided a useful and informative overview to launch today's session. So today, I will continue the session by covering three topics, which are communication, care coordination, and coping with special events. Many of you on this call may wonder, how can we celebrate special occasions when our lives have been interrupted by this disease? The word special occasions are often associated with good memories and emotions such as excitement and anticipation of seeing old friends or long-distance relatives. Sometimes these thoughts can be abruptly interrupted when we remember, oh, wait, that was before cancer entered our lives, when things were normal. So these feelings of excitement and anticipation can quickly change to dread, sadness, and nostalgia. These events have different meanings when cancer is present in our lives. Caregivers may struggle to maintain their traditions and wonder how to celebrate these special events. But I would like to share that preparation, planning, and preventive action can help us discover or help the caregiver discover new traditions and memories. You've heard me say the word caregiver, 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 yet there is still an aura of mystery around this term. Who is a caregiver? What does a caregiver do? And what are the consequences of being a cancer caregiver? These are excellent questions that I will touch on briefly during the next few minutes. So let's begin with who is a caregiver. Let me ask those of you in the call to close your eyes momentarily and picture a caregiver. Who comes to your mind when you hear that word? Is it a healthcare professional? Is it a wife, husband, life partner, son, daughter? A parent or a close friend? Another question that often arises is, what is the definition of a caregiver? And there's a great deal of confusion over the term. For today's discussion, we'll refer to a caregiver as someone who provides care to a loved one diagnosed with cancer. It's a simple description, but those of you who are caregivers know that this role is complex, multidimensional, exhausting, and yet at times extremely rewarding. The role of a caregiver changes during the cancer journey, and those roles change even more during special events. And these changes can create stress, frustration, uncertainty, sadness, and even guilt. There is no doubt the caregiver journey is an emotional and physical roller coaster. The caregiver roller coaster also depends on who the caregiver may be. For example, research has shown gender differences and stressors among spousal caregivers. In one study that was conducted in 2020, female spousal caregivers reported higher depression, anxiety, and social strain, while male spousal caregivers reported higher levels of distress and role conflict compared to other types of male caregivers, like sons or brothers. Interestingly, there is uncertainty about who the primary caregiver is in many families. Many individuals are reluctant to self-identify as the primary caregiver. Patients are often confused as to who the primary caregiver may be because different individuals are involved in their care. That is the reason that caregiving frequently becomes a village of caregivers. To address the multidimensional caregiving roles, a village of caregivers, family members, friends, partners, neighbors, and you know what? Sometimes even strangers. Now I'd like to move on to the role of communication in providing coordinated care. A basic tenet of coordinated care is establishing and maintaining effective communication between the patient, the providers, and that village of caregivers. A simple first step is to develop solid communication lines with all the individuals involved in the patient's care. Your voice as a caregiver must be heard, shared, and sometimes shared repeatedly. So here are a few tips on how a caregiver can use their voice. Ask for help or resources to help navigate this marathon. Develop a roadmap with your village of caregivers. You may wish to delegate tasks to friends or family members who can provide the transportation, who can be your second set of ears during the clinic visits, and most importantly, who can you reach during an emergency? Remember, reporting symptoms and concern to the healthcare team is your job. The information will help your team better coordinate your loved one's care. Ask questions about how to manage side effects or symptoms that your loved one may experience. For example, who do you call and which hospital do you use in an emergency? Although a caregiver cannot monitor symptoms 24/7, knowing which symptoms or side effects must be immediately reported is essential. When cancer enters your life and you become the primary caregiver, traditions, responsibilities, and expectations also change. Some of you may wonder, how can I ever even think about celebration during these times? And others of you may think, how can I make these times even special since we're going through this cancer journey? There is no doubt that a caregiver will face challenging situations. Now, I'd like to share a few challenges that caregivers have told me about. One is learning to say no. Another would be not feeling guilty about saying no. A third, learning not to be hesitant to ask for help or time. And the last one that's really, the most critical thing is making time for self-care. Caregivers face changes in their physical and mental health as they try to cope with all the roles and prepare for special occasions or traditions. They may experience an increase in fatigue and a decrease in sleep. They also may experience increased sadness or feelings of loss for the old times. These symptoms and emotions are perfectly normal. I would like to add that there's been a growing body of literature on the influence of loneliness and social isolation in cancer caregivers. So that is also something you need to watch yourself for. So try not to isolate yourself and try to find social supports that will be there, even though they may not be the ones that you usually had. Our following two speakers will share helpful information on programs, services, and support groups to help with these times. Now, the good news is that for caregivers, it's a perfect time to explore opportunities and discoveries. What do I mean by that? It's a time to discover new roles, strengths, and resources for yourself, your family and friends, and the village of caregivers. It's also an ideal opportunity to make trade-offs with traditional roles that you may have had as the caregiver may have had in the past. For example, if your job was to do all the baking, ask other families to take on the baking. In fact, you may even consider establishing a new tradition of ordering all the food so no one does any cooking. So here are a few tips for navigating the caregiver roller coaster. First, it's essential to communicate regularly with your healthcare team. Work with your team and establish a comfortable rapport with them. Second, prioritize your roles, responsibilities, and expectations. Take a step back and ask yourself, as a caregiver, what can I realistically do during these special occasions while still keeping up with my job and other responsibilities? Acknowledge your feelings. They are perfectly normal. Even those feelings of anger, frustration, resentment, or grieving the loss of a past image you had of your loved one. Those are normal. Don't judge yourself if these feelings come up. Communicate with others about your feelings. Speak up. Patients and caregivers, especially those that live in close proximity, like in the same house, must discuss these emotions with each other. Ignoring them can lead to adverse outcomes for the patient and the caregiver. It's important to enjoy these special moments. Maybe they're not what they were before, but you can tweak them and establish new tradition and memories. So I'd like to just close by sharing a few final tips. Depend on friends, family, and others to help with trade-offs during these times. Be flexible in your roles, responsibilities, and expectations. Be kind and gentle to yourself, your family, your village, and your providers. And one thing you might explore is getting a caregiver for you as the cancer caregiver. Someone you as a caregiver can talk to, take a walk with, or someone you can just call up who will just listen to you. Patients, caregivers, and providers can all use that type of support. In closing, I want to remind our callers that so much is going on during this monumental marathon. Please remember that the best preventive action a caregiver can take is to practice self-care. This self-care will help your loved one and family cope with the cancer journey, and it can contribute to better outcomes in your loved ones. Thank you for allowing me to share my thoughts with you. And Dr. Messner, that concludes my remarks, and I'll turn the program back to you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Palos. That was just a wonderful presentation with such incredible information. I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A. Just a stellar presentation. Thank you so much. And our next speaker will be Ms. Dina Smith. And Ms. Smith is this is the Caregiver Program Coordinator at Cancer Care. And she'll be addressing the important role of long-distance caregivers, practical tips for managing caregiver stress, strategies for self-care, and Cancer Care's free programs and services, Hope Line, and she'll give you information about our Hope Line and also our website as well. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you everyone for being here today. So I want to start off by noting that caregiving can look, feel, and mean different things for different people. So there are many different types of caregivers. There are short-distance caregivers, meaning you maybe are in the same household or even in the same town as your loved one. Or you could be a long-distance caregiver, meaning you live across the city, across the state, even across the country, or maybe in a different country. There are child caregivers, spousal caregivers, and parent caregivers. So maybe you're taking care of a child, whether that child is 5 or 50. Maybe you're taking care of a spouse, or maybe you're taking care of a parent, whether that parent is 40 years old or 80 years old. You might also be more of an emotional caregiver, meaning you lend an ear or a shoulder to cry on. Or maybe you're more of a practical caregiver, meaning that you transport your loved one to and from doctor's appointments, or maybe you administer medications. So however you identify, maybe you identify as one or the other or a little of each, there's no right or wrong way to be a caregiver. And remember that any effort that you're putting into the caregiving process is absolutely more than enough. So, of course, with each type of caregiver or with each type of caregiving responsibility comes its own stressors. So your relationship with your loved one may change. Maybe you had a certain type of family dynamic and that is no longer because of your role as a caregiver to your loved one. In addition, your daily responsibilities or priorities may change. Maybe, for instance, you and your spouse took on 50% and 50% of the domestic responsibilities, and now maybe you're taking on 90% of it. Annual traditions and get-togethers may look different. I know Dr. Palos talked a lot about this, but so maybe birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, they might look very different now. You may also experience symptoms of burnout. So what is burnout? It can be fatigue, sleep changes, weight, or appetite fluctuations, sadness, loneliness, anxiousness. These are all signs and symptoms of burnout. But remember, there are so many ways to alleviate stress. Carve out time for yourself each and every day, and if not every day, at least once a week. I always challenge caregivers to think about, is there at least 10 or 15 minutes in your day that you have just for yourself, even if it's in the car, or maybe you're taking a shower. Try to figure out that 10 to 15 minute period where you can just spend time for yourself, maybe listening to a helpful meditative exercise, some good music, or talking with a friend. Be prepared and organized. Ask the oncologist questions. Write down appointments. Reach out to friends and family members. This is so important, particularly because as the caregiver, you may be responsible for a lot of the organizational aspects, particularly if your loved one is going through symptoms such as chemo brain, where your loved one has memory issues due to the chemo. So definitely bring along a notepad or even your smartphone and open up the notes section and write down any question you may have, all the answers that your doctor provides to you, and reach out to friends and family members if that even is too overwhelming. Remember to exercise and eat healthy. You don't have to run a 5K and eat a keto diet in order to do these things. Even gentle chair yoga is a great form of exercise. And talking with a nutritionist or dietitian can help you get in the right mindset for eating healthy if you don't know where to start. Seek counseling, both individual and group counseling, or one or the other. Say yes to yourself and say no to others. This is not a selfish act. In fact, this is very important because you're creating boundaries. And so long as you are kind and respectful while you're saying no to others, maybe getting together for a social event, or maybe even another family member saying, hey, I need your help with something else, and you have to say no. Okay, you don't even have to explain yourself, but be polite. Listen, you need time for yourself. That's okay. In addition, as I briefly mentioned a couple minutes earlier, practice meditative exercises. Box breathing is a great meditative exercise, so you can think about a box as you do this exercise where you inhale through your nose for 4 counts, you hold the breath for 7 counts, and then you exhale through your mouth through 8 counts, and you repeat the cycle. In addition, I love body scan exercises, and you can find helpful scripts to listen to on YouTube, where a calming voice guides you to think about all your different body parts from head to toe, toe to head, thinking about particular body parts that maybe you hadn't thought about before. So what do your kneecaps feel like right now? What do your elbows feel like right now? This really guides you in being very present, very grounded, and focusing in on the moment here and now rather than, oh, in the future I have to do this, or, oh, in the past I should have done that. Additionally, considering how much information you want to share with family and friends is yet another form of self-care and alleviating stress. So set boundaries for yourself. You and your loved one may want to disclose the diagnosis to only a few people and ask them to respect that this information remains confidential. That's completely okay. You can tell one person, you can tell 100 people. Or perhaps you as a caregiver need as much help as possible, in which case setting up help through online platforms such as My Cancer Circle, Lots of Helping Hands, or Meal Train could unite your friends and family to build a supportive and helpful community for both you and your loved one. In addition, I also encourage caregivers to think about what brings them even the slightest bit of joy. And sometimes caregivers will note that traditions brought them joy, but that these cannot be maintained anymore. So going back to thinking about what Dr. Paolo said, I want to challenge you by guiding you in thinking about what types of traditions you can maintain. Maybe you have to get rid of some. That's completely okay. Maybe trips are going to look a little different. That is okay. Get curious. Get creative. Think about new activities, new events, new traditions that you can make that are going to bring you any semblance of joy right now. In addition, lastly, I want to take the time to acknowledge that long-distance caregiving can be as, if not more, difficult than short-distance caregiving. So, for instance, you may not know how exactly to help your loved one because you can't see them every day. You may experience guilt for not being physically present. You may not be familiar with the local resources available to your loved one. And you may experience burnout symptoms, which are even valid for a long-distance caregiver and oftentimes does happen. But just so you know, there are so many ways that you can still help your loved one, even if you're not living in the same household or even the same town. So again, set up care for your loved one through My Cancer Circle, Lots of Helping Hands, or Meal Train. These are all great online websites where you can go to. You can kind of set up a general calendar so that your loved ones, family members, and friends of both you and your loved one know exactly how to help and when to help. Phone in when your loved one goes to the doctor's appointment. Make sure you know the time and if you'll be doing a FaceTime call or maybe you'll be just phoning in. And if you can't make it at the time that the appointment is, ask your loved one to record the appointment. Typically, doctors are okay with this. Research and set up practical and emotional resources for your loved one. You can absolutely do this from afar, just doing some quick searching, seeing what goes on in their area, seeing what they may qualify for. And that's the glory of using technology these days, is that it's right at our fingertips and it's so easy to use. And also set up check-ins with your loved one via FaceTime, text, phone call, Zoom. There are so many ways in which to ensure that you're on top of things while taking care of your loved one miles away. And remember, all forms of caregiving aren't so easy, so please be patient with yourself. I do invite you to think about three admirable qualities that you've learned about yourself while caregiving. And lastly, honor the sacrifice that you have made for your loved one and reflect upon how your values may have changed or stayed the same. And then finally, I do also want to talk a little bit about the organization that I work for called Cancer Care and the many resources that we have to offer. So while we are based out of New York and New Jersey, we do offer services to people nationwide. We have limited forms of financial and copay assistance. We have online typing-based support groups. We have community-based programs as well as educational workshops like the one that you're in today. We offer resource navigation, which is more commonly known as case management. We also offer lots of educational material, helpful publications. And if you go to our website, cancercare.org, there you'll find information about other cancer-based organizations that we partner with. And then finally, for our New York and our New Jersey clients, we do offer individual and live group counseling services. Thank you so much for having me, and I will turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Smith. That was a wonderful presentation, very comprehensive, and I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. I'm going to ask Rob to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions. Rob?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So we have quite a number of questions here. Let's see. So this is a question for Ms. Smith. I want to join a support group for caregivers, but feel guilty about wanting to even join. I feel guilty because my wife is the one who is sick, but I still feel like I need support because I take care of her. How can I navigate my guilt and start seeking support? Ms. Smith, if you could address this question.
Sure, absolutely. What a great question. So I think the first thing to keep in mind, or the biggest thing to keep in mind, is that you're human. You're not a superhero, although I do like to refer to caregivers as superheroes. But you are human, and therefore you have emotions. You experience burnout, and you do experience those intense emotions such as grief, sadness, anxiousness, worry. So because of that, you know, you need to prioritize yourself sometimes and talk with other caregivers who are experiencing similar feelings, experiences, so that you feel less isolated, more supported. And you can also think about it this way. If you are seeking a support group, if that is what you are looking for, you know it's going to help you. And why wouldn't you want to help yourself in order for you to better help your wife? I like to always remind people that if you recharge your own battery, you can then recharge your loved one's battery. So I hope that prioritizing yourself will eventually lead you to understanding like, hey, this will actually in turn help my wife as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. There's a question for Dr. Palos. Dr. Palos, can you this question is, can you provide any advice on working and caregiving? I started taking care of my wife during chemotherapy, but I still work from time to time for financial reasons. How can I figure how to juggle these responsibilities? I want to prioritize my wife, but I need to work.
That's a good question and a very common dilemma that many male caregivers or any caregiver can find themselves in. They have to maintain their jobs and responsibilities that go along with that while trying to do the caregiving at home or maybe even having to go on trips. One of the things that may be helpful is, remember we talked about the village of caregivers? Try to sit down and, if you have the time, just sit down for a few moments and jot down people that you know would be there to help you. It can be a sister. It can be your next-door neighbor. It can be someone from your faith-based organization. And if you can even put like two or three names down, then you can start wondering, is one of them, you know, at home during the day? Could I ask that person to come and check on my wife? Can I ask that person, you know, if she would be available just to come and sit with her and talk to her, maybe watch television with her? If you have someone else, though, that you can recognize that may be able to go on clinic visits with your wife, because that's a lot of time that you have to take away from work, you know, driving to a certain place, waiting there to see the providers, and driving back home, maybe going to the pharmacy. There's a lot of little details that go into taking care of a caregiver. So if you can find someone to help with that, those types of chores, that will take off some of the pressure from you. And then that way you'll also be feeling better about and have more strength and energy to take care of your wife when you are able to give that time. I do want to let folks know, sometimes we are hesitant to ask for help. We don't want to bother people. We feel like we don't know them well enough, or maybe, you know, we were estranged from them for something. People want to help. But if you just reach out and ask and say, hey, I've been wondering if you would be able to come and sit with my wife for a couple of hours or maybe an hour during the day while I go to work, or would you be able to have some time to take her to the clinic one or two times? And if you start doing it, if you just break the ice with one or two folks, then you'll realize that more folks will be available to help develop your own village. It really is that. It's not just one person that can do this any longer, especially if you live in a large city, you know, because you're having to, I'm sure, drive to the distance to work, then go back home, then go to work. It's mind-boggling. And you want to give your wife attention and loving care as long as you're able to. So think about that village and take that first step. And I really encourage you to just put your foot out there, take that first step, and it'll be easier as time goes by.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much, Dr. Palos. That was really very helpful, I think. The next question is for Dr. Nina Kapoor-Hinson. How can I better advocate for my loved one as a caregiver? My husband remains passive about his side effects from treatment, but I don't want him to have to deal with them if they can be treated as well. Is there a way for me to bring this up without feeling like I am imposing? Ms. Ms. Hinson, can you address this question, please?
That's a really wonderful question in a challenging situation. I think that, you know, identifying that your husband could have a better quality of life is first the most important first step. The second thing is just, you know, asking, I imagine that, you know, maybe you've discussed this with your husband or maybe you haven't, but if you haven't, I would suggest, you know, just asking permission, is it okay if I bring this up during the visit and talk about this so that way we can have a better quality of life together, because when I see you suffering, it negatively impacts me too. And one important thing that sometimes patients don't consider is that they don't have to go through all the side effects that they're facing. We have a lot of good treatments to help mitigate those side effects, and mitigating those side effects really do allow people to stay on treatment better and potentially for longer and with less complications and less delays in treatment. So if you need a way to maybe engage, you know, your husband in why this is important, it's that might be one way that speaks to him a bit. I don't, you know, in my experience, I see a lot of caregivers, you know, just sharing politely during the visit with the providers and saying, actually, you know, you're not doing so well with this treatment, and here are the things that I'm worried about. And if it is, you know, something that you feel like your husband would be all right with, it's sometimes helpful to say that, to break the ice, and then let the provider do the rest. If you also are very worried and feel like there may not be an opportunity during the visit, you can reach out to the provider ahead of time and say, hey, I'm worried about these things in my husband and the ability to kind of get through the next treatment. And so could you please address these for me? So a lot of different avenues to approach this, but, you know, the take home is get the information to the provider so that way they can help with some of this, because we do have ways to help, and that in turn will support better outcomes.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm going to ask our speakers if they could provide takeaways for our participants today. So if you would like to, I'm going to ask each speaker, starting with Ms. Kapoor Hansen, and then Dr. Palos, and then Ms. Smith. So would you like to go first?
Thank you. So what I'll say to you today, it's really important to maintain some sense of normalcy. You are a person who is a caregiver for someone with cancer, and your loved one is a person who has cancer, but you are not the cancer itself. And so the cancer can be overwhelming and take over one's personhood. Do things that make you happy each day. Tell a joke, hug one another, and just showing up makes the world of difference. So don't be so hard on yourself. There's no one person who's perfect all the time, but just showing up makes the world of difference.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. And Dr. Powers?
Sure. I'd like to concentrate on the caregiver and remind them to ask for help to help navigate the caregiver marathon that's there. And remember, your emotional, physical, and spiritual health matters. When you're a caregiver, don't forget that you count. Work hard not to isolate yourself or lose your identity as an individual. Do not judge yourself when things don't go the way you think they should have. Be gentle with yourself. You can choose how do you want to respond to this new journey. And if that is difficult for you, again, ask for help. This is an experience that is very hard to do by yourself. So don't hesitate. Just reach out and ask for help.
Oh, thank you so much. And Ms. Smith.
Thank you. So if I have to leave one thing, it's that I want you to be proud of you're doing as a caregiver, whether you live in the same household with your loved one or if you live even across the country. You're doing so much, and I do hope you know that this takes a lot of courage, a lot of resiliency, so I do hope that you're proud of yourself. Remember to also identify when you're experiencing burnout, because that's a sign that you need to take a step back and focus on yourself for a little bit. Remember, don't feel guilty about this. This is actually very important, because in turn, you will be helping. And last but not least, if you do have any further questions about cancer care services, I do highly recommend that you call our Hope Line number, which is 1-800-813-4673. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to thank all of our speakers. You've really been phenomenal. And I also want to thank all of our participants who really have asked such great questions. Now, I do want to comment about the questions. There are a lot of you on the call today, and we weren't able to take all your questions. So I do want to remind all of you that for those of you who have the chance to ask a question, or for those of you who have a question that you are in queue to ask, please, all of you, take your questions back to your treating healthcare team. They, of course, know you the best, and they can actually help you with getting answers to your questions. And always ask, so it's good to ask your questions here, but it's also good to take those questions and ask them of your healthcare team. And also, most importantly, always find out when your healthcare team is available. Seems like weekends, holidays, and evenings are the hardest time to reach your healthcare team. So be sure that you check with your healthcare team that they're available, when they're available, and who is covering those times. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.